Call this meeting to order for the Lincoln County Board of Commissioners for June 7th.
Commissioners, if I might, you have a quorum here. What we're going to do first, this is a little unusual, but we need to hold an executive session first. Normally what we do executive sessions, it's towards the end of the meeting. We clear the room because the only people who can be present at an executive session to discuss litigation, which is what this is about, are the media. But we're doing this a little bit different today. We're going to have the executive session first, so we're actually going to adjourn into the room back here to hold the executive session, and then we'll come back and start our regular meeting at the regular time at 9:30. So
clarification, we're recessing.
Yes, we're recessing, and then we'll reconvene at 9:30. So if I could get a motion to go into executive session pursuant to ORS 192-660, subparent 2, subparent H, to discuss litigation matters.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes.
Folks, we'll be back at 9:30.
Okay, we're ready to start. We're going to reconvene the meeting after the executive session, and so we'll go to our regular. We've got to dispense some regular business here. Recognitions, proclamations, and two employees. So we have two employees that we want to recognize: Lori Snow and Thomas Graham. And Lori, you've been here with us for 5 years. And Thomas, you've been here for since time began.
Look pretty good for a guy that's been around that long.
So we'll do this. We'll give you the awards. And I will come forward and take a picture. Is that appropriate? Sure. Casey, are you ready?
Yeah, if you want to bring them up front.
Okay.
You get a nice certificate signed by all three commissioners and a secret decoder ring. Actually, it's a service pin.
We should point out, too, those are official signatures.
Yes.
If you stay for 30 years, I'll give you a secret fishing spot.
We need more chairs.
So.
There's one right here. Thank you very much.
Stand right here.
Thank you, Terry. All right, show me those. There we go. Lori, get a little closer to Terry there. Look out. He doesn't bite. All right, big smiles. Thanks, you guys. Congratulations.
Set it on the front side.
Can you water drink?
I don't know, mine do.
Okay, we move down to item 7. Oh, we have new hires. Bridget, are you here?
Yep.
Want to stand up and bring your group?
We're scattered today.
That's why I didn't see you in the crowd.
Those look like some faces I saw this morning after our empty meeting.
Yes, they were there waiting.
Good to see you all again.
So do you guys want to introduce yourselves, your names, and your positions?
I'm Simeon Albrader. Started with the corrections with the Sheriff's Office May 1st, and it's been great so far.
Hi, my name is Elke Silvera. I am a mental health nurse, and I'm down with Lee Street. So...
I'm Stacey Harrison. I do adult mental health at Lee Street.
I am Cheryl Henson. I'm a medical biller for HHS.
I'm Janine Archuleta, and I am an office specialist at the juvenile department.
Welcome to Lincoln County. Hope you enjoy working here.
Thank you.
Yep. Look forward to seeing you again.
And who wants to get a picture? Did you get it?
Oh, yeah, I got it.
I'm good.
Okay.
Yay, mental health.
Okay, we move down to adoption of the consent calendar. And consent calendar are things of routine nature we previously heard. Is there anything you'd like to make comment on?
Uh,
Nope, Mr. Chair, I would move for adoption of the consent calendar as presented.
I'll second it.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. No public hearings. So we move down to bid award for the Collaborative Construction Solutions LLC for the remodel of the jail lobby at the cost of
$196,832.
Roy?
Oh, sir. Let's see that.
Good morning. I'm Roy Kenyon, Lincoln County Public Works Director. And last Wednesday, we presented the bid for the jail lobby remodel. We were asking for you to award it to Collaborative Construction Solutions for $196,832. And at that time, you had a question about whether or not this firm had any experience with the bullet guard installation, and talking to our facilities maintenance supervisor, this company actually has considerable experience in that. And actually, their last job, they installed this same kind of material on the guard shacks at the U.S.-Canadian border. Yeah, they're well experienced in this, and so we're here to ask you to award this bid.
Very good. And I think we should now, for the record, it was also established last week that they were the only qualified bidder and that this was within the architect's estimation.
That is correct. That is correct.
Okay. Motion.
I'll move for approval of the order to award Collaborative Construction Solutions, LLC, for the remodel of the jail lobby at a cost of $196,832.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. Move down to discussion and information. Proposed change in Lincoln County fee schedule. Kristen?
Good morning, Kristen Newell, Assistant County Attorney. So if you turn to your packet, the first department that's requesting fee changes is the Health and Human Services Department. And they have consistently, at least the last few years, had a 3% increase, and that's around what they have right now.
Are there any new fees that are being implemented?
So the only new fees are if you look on page 9 of the proposal, and this is for pool testing.
Pool.
Yeah. Test strips, chlorine vials, chlorine roll. So that's been added.
Is that a new service we're required to provide, or why is that new at this time?
It is required by the state.
Okay.
So if you go to the second pages in the packet, the fees, the previous fees have been included, what they currently are set at, if you want to do a comparison.
I did kind of a random sampling, and it was 2 to 3%, as you said.
Right. Okay. The next page is for the planning department, and they just have one minor fee change, and that's for repair permits for the on-site sewage disposal. And then the last page of your packet is from the animal shelter, and they just have some updates to their fees and some deletion of that are obsolete and they're not used currently.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
So if everything looks great, then I'll prepare an order and we can adopt this next week on the consent calendar.
I'm fine with that.
I'm okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. We move down to reports and elected official department directors reports. Measure 21-177.
Commissioners, if I might, I'm assuming that most of the folks in the audience here want to hear about this particular measure, what the next steps are. I'm going to start by making a commentary here because I think this applies very carefully and closely in this particular situation. Democracy is messy. That's a statement that I think as we discuss this matter here, we're going to learn more and more about. Measure 21177, which is the freedom of Lincoln County from aerial spray pesticides, resulted, I think, in the closest countywide ballot measure election that at least I've observed in the 30 years that I've been here in Lincoln County. There were high emotions and strong opinions on all sides of this issue, and they played out over the last few months. And there was and is much speculation about what the measure legally can and cannot accomplish now that the election is over. So today, with the board, we're going to be discussing issues and challenges, as well as our options as we determine next steps concerning this measure. I want to go through a little background because I think it's very important to get a little information related to this. First of all, this measure came about because a group of citizens formed a nonprofit association called the Lincoln County Community Rights Nonprofit, and assisted by the National Community Rights Legal Defense Fund, they crafted an ordinance to ban aerial spraying of pesticides in Lincoln County. I need to make sure it's understood and up front that Lincoln County and my office, the Office of Lincoln County Legal Counsel, were not involved in the preparation or in the review of this particular ordinance. The group proposed adoption of the ordinance through a petition process as a local county initiative ballot measure, and that was on the May 16, 2017 election. And that's authorized under both Oregon law and county code. The requisite number of signatures were gathered by the petitioners to place the matter on the ballot, and the measure was passed by a margin of 6,994 for and 6,933 against, so a 61 vote difference here. This is not the first measure the community rights groups and Community Rights Legal Defense Fund have attempted in Oregon. In fact, I was able to find that there are four other counties, and including Lincoln County, five counties have voted on similar measures. And although the subject matter has been different in some of those measures, there's been two kind of core issues that have been addressed on these. One is the banning of aerial spraying. The other is banning genetically engineered, genetically modified plants and foods. There are efforts underway in at least one other county right now, and a statewide measure is being prepared for circulation, basically by the community rights groups across the state. But I want to tell you that a common feature, and in fact the one constant in all of these particular measures, is that they've been the subject of litigation, and extensive litigation. So I want to talk a little bit about what's happened out there. Jackson County was the first county to consider a community rights measure. And the subject matter of that particular measure was to ban the use of genetically engineered plants, or what we more commonly refer to or hear to as GMOs. It was a very straightforward ordinance, I thought, that prohibited propagation, cultivation, raising, or growing of genetically engineered plants in the county. It was dissimilar to the Lincoln County ordinance in that it contained none of the identified natural rights references, any of the direct action or self-enforcement remedies, or invalidation of other existing laws language, which are in the Lincoln County ordinance. That measure passed, and that measure is currently the law in Jackson County. But the measure was challenged in court. And the county actually, in that particular case, delayed enforcement of the law pending the resolution of the lawsuit. It took several years to work its way through the court system. The circuit court ruled that the ordinance was valid and under the law at that time. But the county had to reach a settlement with the parties, the plaintiffs that brought that particular lawsuit, that allowed them to actually continue to raise genetically engineered crops for a period of up to 8 years. That was a settlement that was reached in that particular litigation. The second effort that I was able to observe was in Josephine County. But in between the time that Jackson County adopted their ordinance and Josephine County considered their ordinance, the state legislature stepped in and in 2013 adopted a statute called the Seed Bill, Senate Bill 563, which is ORS 633.738, which very specifically prohibits a local government, including counties, from enacting an ordinance to regulate or a regulation to prevent production of agriculture, flour, nursery, vegetable seeds, and other products. After that law's effective date in 2014, Josephine County voters were presented with one of these ordinances, very similar to the Jackson County ordinance. The voters of Josephine County approved that particular ordinance, too. At that time, the Josephine County commissioners refused to enforce the ordinance. They said that they felt it was invalid and they were not going to enforce it. It took a couple of years, but in 2015, another action was filed in court, in Circuit Court in Josephine County. And this action challenged the validity of the Josephine County measure. After ruling on a number of preliminary issues that only lawyers would love and understand, the court held that the county's ordinance was preempted by state law and therefore was invalid and unenforceable, and enjoined Josephine County from taking any action to enforce the ordinance. That was the ruling of the court. That decision is currently on appeal to the Oregon Court of Appeals. The parties briefed that particular matter, and they completed their briefing last month. I found it kind of interesting. There was no discussion of that particular court action in any of the discussion around this particular ordinance or any examination of that. The case is pending, but we don't yet have a decision. The third time this came up was in Benton County, our neighbor to the east. This was the first ordinance that deviated from the fairly standard kind of ordinance model of the Jackson and Josephine ordinance to include newly identified protections for natural communities. And in this case, seed heritage was another one of the things that was protected, and to include provisions around self-government and self-executing rights. In that sense, it really is closer in language to the Lincoln County ordinance than it did to the either Jackson or Josephine County ordinances. It was entitled the Local Food System Ordinance. In addition to prohibiting genetically engineered organisms, it would establish certain rights of agriculture, as noted above. It affirmatively sought to repeal inconsistent county laws and asserted, for the first time that I've seen anyway, that it preempted state and federal laws inconsistent with the enumerated rights and prohibitions of the ordinance. Like its predecessors, the measure was litigated. These were pre-election challenges to the ballot measure. I want to note that these pre-election challenges do not ever challenge any of the substantive language or provisions of the law. The courts do not engage in providing advisory opinions, so they will not look at any of the substance of any of these laws until after the voters have spoken and after they've voted on it. So there's actually some very limited challenges that are made pre-election, but nonetheless, those challenges were asserted in Benton County. They were resolved, and the measure made the ballot in Benton County. After an extensive campaign, similar to the one going on here by groups supporting and opposing the measure, the voters of Benton County defeated that ordinance. Therefore, it's not in effect in Benton County. Coos County held an election at the same time that we held our election to consider an ordinance in May of 2016. This was a little bit different subject matter here. Again, the same kind of language, the same kind of philosophy around proposing an ordinance, but it was called Establishing a Community Bill of Rights for Sustainable Energy Future. And it contained some of the same language we see here about self-governing authority and asserted, again, preemption of state and federal laws contrary to the enactment. I was unable to find out whether or not there were any pre-election challenges to that measure. There may have been, but I wasn't able to find that. But nonetheless, it went before the voters in Coos County, and the Coos County voters rejected this ordinance. So therefore, it's not in effect in Coos County. Currently, there are three proposed amendments before Lane County. These are amendments to the Lane County Charter. Lane County has a home rule charter. It's a home rule county. The measures actually incorporate kind of elements of some of the previous things that were done here. One amendment would establish the protection of the local food system ordinance. The second would ban aerial spraying of herbicides, is what they call it. And the third would establish community self-government. These amendments had not yet qualified for the ballot in Lane County, but as with others, they were subject to pre-election litigation and challenges. That pre-election litigation has preliminarily been resolved, these are going forward. They're at the signature gathering stage, but the court noted, and the parties, I'm sure, will continue litigating, that there are additional legal challenges that will be made once this qualifies for the ballot. And then again, as in Josephine County, it appears that, if this is enacted, there will be post-election challenges. The last one is the statewide ballot measure. This is a measure to amend the Oregon Constitution, and it's entitled the Right of Local Community Self-Government. And it's currently seeking signatures to qualify for the statewide 2018 ballot. This measure, like the others, was challenged in court. And in fact, this particular case involved the Attorney General's office and attorneys for the petitioners who raised, again, pre-election litigation questions, and those were resolved, and this is going ahead. So where are we in Lincoln County? I'm not sure that people know or understand yet, but like the other enumerated measures, we've already been in court twice on this particular measure. These were pre-election challenges. In each case, the county defended the right to proceed with the election. That is the status of the law. We avoided, I'm going to quote now from actually language I thought was really good in the statewide ballot measure challenge there. But what we did is we avoided the temptation to delve into the language and meaning of the measure. Those are initially the subjects for citizens to consider and debate. So we could not have this discussion about what the measure might do or might not do prior to it being enacted. That was our responsibility and duty at that stage of the initiative process. But we also recognized very clearly in the early stages, both my office and the courts, that there are legal questions and challenges with this particular measure. And we noted that there were legal challenges and questions in the briefs that we submitted to the court. What we argued, and rightfully so, is you can't deal with those issues until after the voters have raised or voted on the issue. But now we're at the stage when we need to identify those issues and establish really a clear path to resolution of the issues, even if that leads to invalidation of the ordinance. I want it clearly understood that my concerns are not limited to a single provision of the ordinance, such as the direct action self-enforcement provisions, or involve a simple clarification of definitions, such as what does aerial spraying actually mean. I see that there are fundamental problems with the ordinance under Oregon law, and likely federal law too, and they may be beyond any changes we can make to the ordinance, any tweaks we can make to salvage it and accomplish its intended purposes. But I also think that contrary to what's been done in a couple of the other cases here, there may be components of the ordinance which are valid, and that will apply later after a review by the courts. So I was prepared today to identify some of these issues and a possible series of steps to address the issues in the only manner that I feel can fully and fairly air and resolve all the concerns, and that's in the courts. But things changed as of 3 o'clock yesterday. And I'm putting my initial recommendations on hold because the first legal action challenging the ordinance has already been filed in Lincoln County as of 3 o'clock yesterday. That changes both the manner of our response and our next steps, as my office must first and foremost prepare to assist the court in reviewing the ordinance in light of the filed complaint. Now, I want you to know that I've been in contact, just especially in the last few days, with proponents and opponents, attorneys who represent both. Because, again, there was litigation involved in Lincoln County. The petitioners who brought this forward had an attorney who represented them in that. I've been in contact with that attorney. We've also been contacted by other attorneys who may want to get involved in this. My philosophy is going to be the more the merrier here. I want this thing to be fully and fairly reviewed. And I'd like to have it done in as efficient a manner as it can in as few actions as are necessary. I was very concerned at the outset that we would see this piecemeal attacked and have to deal with this on a piecemeal basis. And I would much rather have it fully examined rather than do this on a case-by-case basis. So I really have no doubt that with the, that like in all the other cases around the state and in our own case in Lincoln County, that there's going to be representatives of the various interests here involved in the litigation, and that, that will there will be arguments made on all sides of the issue. I will seek to join in addition, given the nature of what's done here, being proposed here, the Attorney General's office, since one of the arguments that's being proffered is that this local enactment preempts state law. When you're doing something like that, when a preemption issue comes up, by law, we have to at least inform the Attorney General's office. They've been involved in other litigation around this particular issue. They were involved in Josephine County, so I have no doubt that they will also participate. I think the litigation was really the one outcome all the parties certainly could have could foresee was going to happen as a result of this particular election. I think it's important to note, though, as we take our positions on this, that counties have and will at times take positions contrary to enactments, federal or state, that we believe do not comply with law. That also would be a position that may be contrary to the enactments that are made by the voters of the county. Now, like one recent example of that is that the president issued an executive order on immigration and threatened to withhold funding from jurisdictions, including the county. Lincoln County, like many other counties and jurisdictions statewide and across the nation, has not implemented those provisions because we believe they're contrary to state law. And it's not uncommon for courts, upon review of voter-enacted ballot measures, to later invalidate those measures. So I want you to understand this is not something that will be a first time that's ever happened. Again, the courts do not do a pre-review before the voters vote. They don't issue advisory opinions. They don't review the substance. That can only occur after the fact. So I was able to find, just looking at a very cursory examination, actually, I found that Oregon or federal courts invalidated at least 7 different ballot measures approved by the voters of the state. And they ranged from a variety of issues all across the what might be considered the political spectrum here. They invalidated term limits, both on a state and federal level. They invalidated provisions to try and limit PERS, the public employee retirement system. They invalidated the Marriage Act. You may recall that one. That was an act that was passed by the voters of Oregon to define marriage as between one man and one woman. Counties actually said, opposed that. We thought it was contrary to law, and we were actually later vindicated when the courts did invalidate that particular measure. There was a measure that concerned that predated measures 49 and 37 and 49, which was called Measure 7, which actually said that local governments were required to pay for regulations of land use. That was invalidated by the court. So it's not unusual, again, to see that happen. And unfortunately, we've actually advocated in the past that there should be a methodology for pre-screening some of these measures before they actually make it out to the voters. But, you know, I can understand why there's more of an attempt to let the voters decide what you're going to do, and then you're going to take care of those. So at this point, my recommendation to the board, again, I had a series of recommendations to both implement the ordinance and then get it in a different methodology in front of the courts, and I may still come back and make those recommendations. But at this point, what I have to inform the board is that it's now in the hands of the court. And we will be participating in that litigation, and I'm sure, again, many others will be participating in litigation. The one thing I would like direction from the court that the plaintiffs have asked that they will seek from the court, and I actually agree with this one, is they will ask that we get a preliminary injunction against the provision of the ordinance that authorizes direct action. I'm extremely concerned that anybody who believes that this local enactment will somehow, and I'm going to be a little bit, well, I'm just going to say it, that gives them a get-out-of-jail-free card by committing a direct action that's contrary to, for instance, a state criminal law is sorely mistaken. I am very sure that that particular provision, I think that it is more likely than not that the court will throw out that particular provision. You can't do a local enactment. That's very clear under case law, under the system of laws between state and local governments that you can't somehow create a civil law that invalidates criminal law. So I'm worried about somebody feeling that they're immune from prosecution by committing an act. I think you're also going to find that they're going to also say that you're not immune from other common law tort remedies from a landowner who may actually, if you trespass, if you damage property, you did any of those kinds of direct action activities here. So I think that I would like to suggest that the board join in, give the courts an opportunity to actually rule on that particular measure, see where that goes before we actually look at any kind of, before it actually goes into effect. This will take some time. I have no doubt that this will not only go through the Lincoln County Circuit Courts, but one or the other side will appeal this to the Oregon Court of Appeals, and possibly, if they're unhappy with the decisions made by the Court of Appeals, to the Supreme Court. We're going to be involved in litigation for some time. And that's just the nature of the beast. That's what these are. That's what these particular measures, that's what's happening across the country, not just in Oregon, but across the country. So that's where we're at. And I'm here to take any questions you might have. I would like some direction, though, on joining in with the plaintiffs and actually requesting that at least that provision, it's provision 6A and B of the ordinance, be enjoined.
Okay, question. So
sure.
That's only not seeking an injunction to stay enactment of the entire ordinance?
It won't, but in effect, you know, that's basically that takes out the self-help kind of provisions
right.
In here. So we're going to wait, I think as they did in Josephine County and Jackson County and others, we're going to wait until the courts actually rule on these things. And I'll be very upfront. I think it's more likely than not, in my understanding and reading of the law, and I've read all the briefs that were filed in the Josephine County case and others, that the court is going to rule that portions, if not all, of this ordinance are invalid. They have raised arguments of preemption, which is one of the key legal issues here, that is not just under one state law, but three state laws that actually already are involved in the regulation of pesticides in Oregon.
Will you follow three state laws? Mentioned?
Yeah, it's
before you guys have to ask a follow-up question for the last one.
Oh, okay.
Okay, but then, so if I read the ordinance correctly and I understand process, it says it takes effect 30 days after the election result is certified, mm-hmm. which was June 5th. So unless the courts act by July 5th, the ordinance would go into effect, or
It would actually go into effect.
Okay.
But again, I think what we're going to do is we're going to enjoin the right to do the self-help, that okay. portion of it, that if the court agrees with that. And I actually don't think that they will rule otherwise. I think they'll actually grant that mm-hmm. order for an injunction. And then I would actually recommend that we don't enforce the ordinance until we get some rulings from the court. We need to get some clarity on this.
Thank you.
Okay. So in answer to your question, the three major statutes that they're alleging in the complaint are the State Pesticide Control Act, which is ORS Chapter 634, the Oregon Forest Practices Act, which is ORS Chapter 527, and for lack of a better name for this, it's called the Right to Farm and Forest Act, and that is found in ORS Chapter 30. And they've raised a number of other constitutional arguments, a number of other legal arguments. That's just the three main ones.
Well, I've said all along, my concern has been I took an oath of office to protect and support the Constitution, and I've said publicly many times I question some of the constitutionality of some of the language in the measure, and so I think the courts need to clarify that.
I'll say basically the same thing you do. That's what our oath says we're supposed to do. That's what we'll try to do is follow the law.
Once we determine what the law is, we'll certainly support it.
To let folks know, what I intend to do with my office is, as we actually file pleadings in this particular matter, as the pleadings come to us, we'll post them on our website so folks can take a look at it. You know, this is a lot of this is very legalistic. But it is in some ways, and obviously there's a whole lot of, actually a whole lot of case law, surprisingly, on these particular issues out there. That's why I don't lightly say that I think it's more likely than not that portions or the whole ordinance will be found invalid. That's my reading. I've read very carefully the case law out there. But it is a system, and I hope people will critically analyze when they go back and look at this, critically analyze this relationship between state, federal, and local law, and read through, if you can read through some of the legalistic part of this thing, really look closely at this, because I think this is a very, very different approach to governance in terms of what's being proposed here. And I think if you look at it critically, there may be some issues and questions raised about that approach and how it might be applied in other areas and arenas. By the same token, I want to clear that the county, I mean, there's going to be these preemption arguments, the county's position generally, and in following the rule of law in the system here, is we go to the legislature constantly and argue against preemption. And it wouldn't be beyond us to say, you know, the battle here needs to happen at the state. It needs to happen with your state representative and your state senator and those in the legislature who enacted the preemption in the first place. We try to battle these preemptions. We don't like preemption. We do not like it. There have to be some good reasons. But that being the case, for whatever policy and political reasons, this particular subject matter, as well as several others in the state, they have preempted our ability to control that locally.
Comment on that. Because legislatures change, not only parties but individuals, that an invalidation happens regularly by the makeup of the body. Because mm-hmm. I've worked on a couple of these while I was in the legislature. Is that what you foresee going on? Is a future body then?
Well, it's interesting. I thought, again, it was sort of interesting that I didn't see any discussion about this. There was actually a measure in front of the Oregon legislature this year. Representative Hovey from Eugene proposed a measure, and I can get you the number. It's HB 3226, I think.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Is that right? 3226.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
That actually would have accomplished a lot of not everything. It would have been a complete ban, but what actually would have reinstated local control over this particular issue in a number of areas. So, for instance, one of the areas that was discussed here was regulations around water resources and especially around municipal water sources out there. This bill, had it passed, if it were to pass, would actually give local governments the ability to regulate around those watersheds. And so there's been some action. There's some efforts in that arena to actually address the issue. And I was really somewhat surprised that I didn't see any commentary around that particular issue.
If I understand correctly, do you know, Mr. Belmont, that it had a hearing in committee but did not get a vote to advance out of committee?
Yes. I think that's the case. So there have been other efforts out there to deal with this issue on a statewide basis.
Okay.
So I just make sure that I understand. Do I have your consensus to proceed? I mean, I'm obviously going to proceed in the litigation and presenting a county position out there. I'm making sure the court has all the information it needs to make a decision. But in terms of requesting with the plaintiffs and supporting an injunction on those provisions 6A and 6B?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Yes, but I would like you to explain there's several different things in there that the county we should protect ourselves and our rights that are going to be in different ways. Will you explain how that you mentioned in the room? That
there's two claims for relief in what's been filed so far. The first is what I'll call, they're challenging the validity of the ordinance as adopted. So they're actually joining the county clerk in and saying they want the court to order that the election be declared invalid. They're raising three separate arguments. One deals with provisions of the Oregon Constitution around enumerating full text of the measure. Second is a single subject argument. And the third is that this is beyond matters of county concern. I can tell you right now, our position will be to oppose all three of those. And for a couple of reasons. The first one, the matters of county concern, we believe this is a matter of county concern. They may have preempted us from dealing with it, but it is a matter of county concern, and we're not going to concede that it's not a matter of county concern. The other two, interestingly enough, were already litigated. In our minds, they've been litigated. The plaintiff's attorney is citing another state statute, and he's going to bring up these arguments in a different context. He's going to argue, and I don't want to get too deep in the weeds about great legal arguments you make on these things, claim preclusion, res judicata, all these different concepts out here. But we would actually be taking a position that would oppose those, that things. The second claim for relief is the declaratory judgment thing. That invokes the preemption under those statutes that I cited and various other arguments they make. And there may be elements of those in which we're not going to oppose what they're saying in there. We're basically going to leave it to the court. We're going to say, here's what the law says, and let the court decide on those things. There are other elements of that you know, especially those that address matters of county concern, that we're going to take a position contrary to them. So. That's all I have. And I think I take public input.
Proceed back down the agenda. We have commissioners' reports, and then we have constituent input. So,
Mr. Chair, one thing I'd mention quickly. I was in Salem yesterday evening for a hearing of the Joint Transportation Committee. They're taking testimony several days this week on the proposed transportation package, and I was actually there at the request of some folks from Yamhill County to support adequate funding for the Newburgh-Dundee bypass in the bill, that it's in the bill, but there's no dollar amount attached to it yet, and they wanted to hear a coastal perspective on how that's going to make it easier for people to travel to and from the coast, not only for recreation, but business and potentially for emergency evacuation as well. So,
that's been there, done that.
Yep.
I died on the sword on the transportation bill when I was in the legislature.
But at least phase one is done now, so I think if it doesn't happen this year, it's going to happen. It seems to be the consensus, because with all the states already got invested.
They've still got to tap some money.
Yeah, exactly.
Doug, any?
Well, I attended a what was called a regional listening summit, I guess. It was actually organized by a representative of the 12th Federal Reserve District, of which Oregon is a part of, and had representatives from various sectors of our economy. There was finance, there was housing, there was state labor department representatives, and it was a good conversation about workforce development, some of the broader issues that we face. Of course, housing was something that was talked about, a lot of conversation about soft skills and how do we develop soft skills in our workforce, but also consistent with the work that I've been doing as far as development of the maritime sector strategy, and hopefully we'll be able to get some curriculum at our community colleges that will offer educational opportunities for individuals that are interested in the maritime sector. And also, there is federal money available through the Workforce Investment Act that can be used to develop some training programs at the maritime training programs for maritime activities. So, another part of the puzzle.
Well, I'll mention in the maritime sector, I got involved with the closing of the fish plant here, the Whiting Surimi plant, and there's about 125 jobs there involved, plus several boats and equipment stuff was going to be laid up. And what I got involved was not to pick on either side, but to try to keep the plant open and keep it running. Well, it's open and running.
So good to hear.
It's down there. They actually took the first load of fish off the Pacific Rim the other day, and it's moving forward at present. I mean, there's a court case there.
I was going to say, isn't there a court case is going on
but
that issue, too?
We needed to keep the product moving in. It's an export item around the world, and we've got to harvest it. The markets are going to be challenging, as always, in that business, but I think
the people that are running it realize the situations that are there, keeping our fleet, keeping the jobs in Lincoln County. Okay, we're down to constituent input. Constituent input is limited to 5 minutes on any subject you want.
And I think some people signed in.
And we have a sign-up sheet. And we may or may not respond. Normally, we don't respond to constituent input. But so, Casey, who's up?
Alan Fuchs, yeah. Better ask him to clarify that. I don't think I'm saying it correctly.
Will you straighten
out? You did a great
out?
Job.
How did you say it?
My name is Alan Fugician. I'm a co-manager with Gibson Farms in Siletz, and I want to thank the chair and the members of the commission, as well as the county council, for the opportunity to speak with you today. I have some input regarding Measure 2177. I really want to thank the county for their continued active engagement with our residents on this important issue and for your leadership going forward. My concerns about Measure 2177's constitutionality, its ambiguous language and its possible harmful consequences still stand, even given the results of our election. These concerns are made more acute by the possibility that it could soon come into effect as ordinance. And I think that can cause real harm and hardships for Lincoln County families. So in that context, I'd urge swift and efficient action on the part of the county to do what's possible to ensure certainty and safety to our residents regarding this counterproductive measure. Going further, we intend to participate in any inclusive and meaningful constructive community dialogue on the important role and the practices of agriculture and forestry in Lincoln County, as well as other natural resource industries. And most immediately, we would like to ensure that local families engaged in farming, forestry, fishing, and other pursuits that are so vital to our county, both culturally, economically, and ecologically as well, are not harmed by decisions arising from this process. And that's my input. Thank you.
Thank you.
Maria Stouse.
First of all, I'd like to thank the commissioners and the county attorney, Wayne Billman, for wanting to make sure that whatever proceedings follow now lead to a complete understanding to what the measure is about and what its implications are. And also about expressing your disapproval of preemption laws, which of course you can't change, but to know about that. And the rest of what I want to say is to clarify once and for all what the measure is about and what it isn't, and how it relates to constitutionality. So we have that the people have spoken and determined that they do not want aerial pesticide spraying in the county. Everybody knows what aerial pesticide means. Never before has there been a question about it. It is spraying pesticides by helicopter, airplane, or drone. And the term pesticides includes herbicides. Aerial pesticide spraying is done predominantly to kill vegetation that competes with the growth of industrial forests of Douglas fir. It is not done predominantly to combat pests. So the amounts of pesticides that are sprayed are much larger than what it would take to combat pests. It is time for discussion on the measure just approved by the people of Lincoln County to be about what the measure actually does and not about whatever a company paid to defeat it can think up to turn voters against it. We went through that already. People in Lincoln County have died of cancer due to aerial pesticide spraying. They have had miscarriages due to aerial pesticide spraying, and they have given birth to babies with birth defects due to aerial pesticide spraying. Wildlife is affected the same way as humans are. The people have a constitutional right to self-government. today that right is being denied through preemption laws and used specifically to protect profits derived from corporate projects. Aerial pesticide spraying is an example of such a project. Fracking is another one. We luckily, so far, do not have any of that here. It is unsafe for people and wildlife to live near projects such as aerial pesticide spraying or fracking. The Constitution of the State of Oregon and that of many other states declares that ensuring the safety of the people is one of the fundamental functions of government. It does not declare anywhere that protecting the profits of corporations is also one of its functions, and much less so a fundamental one. Any law that protects the profits of corporations at the expense of the safety of the people is unconstitutional. It is time that we pay attention to our Constitution, which additionally declares that all men, when they form a social compact, are equal in rights. It is unconstitutional to preempt the people's right to safety in order to protect the profits of a fraction of those people. If I spray a person with orange juice, that person has the right to sue me. The people as a whole, never having been asked for their consent, have been subjected to aerial pesticide spray, drift, and contamination for more than 30 years. Yet according to preemption law and to the Forest Practices Act, they have no right to sue companies again engaged in aerial pesticide spray.
You have about 30 seconds. Okay.
In drafting this ordinance, we have presented the people with no more than what is their lawful constitutional right. Through their vote, they have now claimed that right, a right which they should never have been deprived of to begin with. That's all I have to say.
Thank you.
I'd ask you not to applaud on these because this is constituent input. And there's different opinions in here. I'd rather not see sides taken by applause. So,
is there anybody else on the list?
Peter Bregman, what's next?
Peter Bregman.
Thank you very much. The applause is not very welcome because that's my point, gentlemen. You had a 22% vote. Account of people that live in this area that actually voted. 50% of those approximately voted against and 50% voted in favor of it. However, if you look at the makeup of the population here, it used to be all farming. Today it's turning into urban area. Obviously, the urban area is continuously growing, and so the power of those people are going to be exhibited in this particular measure. My question, first of all, if you look at that, when you take 22% of your vote, and half of those are for and half of those are, that means that only 11% of your total population was in favor of this measure. The others didn't speak out. I'd like to be correct if I'm wrong.
I believe the turnout was 42%, I thought, not 22.
I think that's right. Yeah. Was it 42?
Yeah.
Then I misunderstood. Yes. Okay, then fine. The numbers are different.
Of the registered voters.
Yeah. Oh, the registered voters. Now, I'm not one of those registered voters, by the way. I'm not able to vote because I'm an import, and I still live in two places, but I do have an interest in the farming community. But the numbers are far from being all in favor of no spray. Then, of course, the other issue is the facts that the lady was just talking about have not really been ascertained by the people that really understand. And my problem is this whole situation is we have an emotional issue that is being voted on. It's very easy to put a sign up on the road that says no spraying and not actually have the backup information that I needed to make a decision like that. So I really would suggest that to gentlemen here that you have the people that understand the depth of the situation and not the people that are emotionally turned on by a conversation like that was just prior to me speaking, that turns on into an emotional vote, and I think that's wrong to proceed on that issue.
That's fine, you can laugh about it, but the facts are not that way. Also, the clear-cutting issue that is being brought up is not an issue that is really a farm issue. If you look at the numbers, and I got just a paper here this morning that talked about the number of acres that are being deforested for urban consumption, plants, roads, houses, that's where the permanent deforestation comes into place. It's not the farming community that takes the harvest off and replants it, mandated according to the Fair Practice Act. I'd like you to think about these three facts that I mentioned here and give us some consideration. And most of all, I feel that this is not an issue to be voted on. This should be decided by the people that know what they're doing. Thank you.
Thank you.
You don't have to plot. Thank you.
I would ask that we show respect to whomever is speaking.
Yeah.
Deborah Fans.
Good morning. Thank you, Wayne, for your synopsis and for presenting what your heart and mind is guiding you to do in this process. I would acknowledge to the commissioners that I understand that you are representing two diverse groups of constituency, and I hope that there are creative solutions and judiciary will help make clear what benefits and what does support the constitutional right to safety and well-being for the people of this county. I am one of the 6,994 people who are in favor of this measure, of this plan to ban aerial pesticide toxic spraying without informed consent. One of the things that I would challenge about going before the state legislature and Hovey introducing his legislation, how many times have these kinds of measures that have been proposed that will increase the salmon-bearing streams protections, that will look out after the interests of the ecosystems, how many times have those made it out of committee? Not very often. It's disturbing and depressing to look at the aerial views of what's happening in our county as the resource extraction is going on here. If nothing else, this measure has awakened a lot of people to the trends, to what's going on in our county, and to ask questions about why is it we don't seem to be able to make any changes happen. Who is it who wants them to fail? Who wants to take care of the health of our ecosystems? Who's paying attention to the health of the people of this county? I know that you are under oath to be participants in that whole picture of balancing, finding reasonable solutions, and I too would like to be part of dialogue that is meaningful. And I take exception to the comment that maybe we don't know what we're talking about. I've been on a learning curve, and perhaps some of you have joined me where it's going straight up. We're entering into phase two where we're going to learn about litigation. Just for the record, I would like to present the paper that is from the CELDEF organization, the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, who has offered pro bono services to support this litigation for the county and for all of us in the county. And I recognize that you have a choice to say yes or no to that, but I would like the public to be aware that that is on the table.
And I think maybe just to respond to that real quickly, they can come and participate in the litigation. We'd hope they do so. There is local representation and has been supporting the ordinance throughout the state, and there are attorneys, and they will be involved in the litigation, whether or not this group chooses to or not. There's going to be representation for that, a legal voice in the process involved already. So,
I guess what I'm addressing is that I've heard people express concern about we're going to break the county budget because of that, or
and that's a good point. But unfortunately. because I am a lawyer. Litigation is what we do. It, you know, doesn't matter whether we're doing this or something else. You know, it is. It puts some pressure on my office in terms of participating, but it's what we have to do. It's what we do. So, you know, in that sense, yes, there will be a great deal of time and effort expended, but we're going to do that.
And I would also comment for the public benefit that there are also resources available to the county for an insurance policy that helps to meet any claims of, I can't think of the term that I'm looking for.
Liability?
Yes, liabilities, that sort of thing. So thank you for letting us come today and to have our say. I appreciate that. And may we all find a way to win in this situation.
A tree to win.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, first off, I really want to express my appreciation. I heard Mr. Belmont express that the Board of Commissioners actually supports the autonomy of our county on many issues and our right to govern ourselves. And I think there's a great deal of people who voted for that and are really holding you up to that standard. And that standard also includes all the things that have been brought up already about our health, our welfare, of our children, of ourselves as human beings, as well as our environment and nature and animals that cannot be here to speak for themselves, nor could they vote. I speak first as a forester. I've been a forester in Lincoln County since I moved here 27 years ago. When I purchased my property of over 200 acres, it was absolutely clear-cut, raped, and a real mess, and they left a lot of trash. And I spent years cleaning that up, but not once have I ever needed to spray anything. Any kind of release that I've done manually or through some machinery. We've even brought in horse teams to do some selective logging to put structure into the stream to enhance salmon habitat. So I've dedicated myself to the environment, and I'm really in touch with it. And I'm also a member of the organization that a previous speaker just spoke from. I happen to be a forester who does not agree with what people have been saying is what we need to do to protect our supposed industry of forestry and agriculture. So there are alternatives. I believe it is a lie to say that this ordinance is going to disrupt that. No, what it does is it forces you to change your priorities in the ways that you do business to where it meets the environment, it meets the needs of your neighbors, and doesn't put your needs before theirs. There's plenty of examples where people do a cost shift, where they say, well, it's going to save me money to do this type of forestry practice, but I don't care if it costs you your health. I don't care if it costs you your life. I don't care if you have to spend the rest of your life spending off medical bills. And that is wrong, and I'm so sad and hurt about that. I'm so sad that our neighbors don't see the larger picture and see systemically how we affect each other. And so that is my purpose for being here in Lincoln County. It's the only reason for being here, is to protect the environment and to protect people. And that's what I do professionally as a counselor. I'm helping people be whole, and I'm helping the environment be whole and balanced. And I'm holding you as our commissioners up to that standard. And I can give you plenty of examples in my experience in 27 years where the county has made up their own understandings of what state law means, where they've come up with their own conclusions of what the county ordinances are. And I'm very good at doing legal research, and I can give you plenty of examples of that. And I'm challenging you now to do that, because you are all family people. You have families. Many of you have children. And I know you care about the environment. I'm asking you to step up and not just listen to the same old fearful things about lawsuits. I've even heard some of you say we have deep pockets and that we have a legal counsel that can back up these fights. And I'm asking you to fight for us now. I'm asking you to put your pants on and be strong and make this a line in the sand, and don't let it back. Don't back down. This is an emotional plea to you. And I'm just showing you my heart, and I'm being vulnerable.
And I know there's a lot of other people here who feel the same way. And yet, within the legal system, we're not always able to express ourselves that way, but I'm expressing myself that way today. I hope you hear that loud and clear. I hope you hear that everything I've ever done has been to protect the land and to care for people and to send love out into the world. And that is the message here. The message is love. It's not fear. It's not hate. It's not profit. It's about loving and caring about your neighbors and also setting a precedent and something that's going to carry us into the future and the next generations. And I hope you're ready to fight for us. Thank you very much.
Susan Swift.
Hello. Thank you again for having this hearing. Can you tell us the entity of the plaintiff who has filed the challenge?
It is a landowner in Lincoln County as a plaintiff.
But is that going to be available public?
Yeah, I will post the actual filings on our website. We'll have a page.
Okay.
We'll make a connection to the front page. If you just go to Google Lincoln County, Oregon, you'll be able to get in, and we'll post the filings that are in there.
So we're going to include this?
The complaints, the initial complaint and supporting materials. Yes, I'll make sure that's there.
I know one of the frustrations about the concept of state preemption is that, like, I was in front of state Board of Forestry hearings in the 70s and the early 80s as we really tried to fight this. The pesticide, herbicide spraying has actually been going on more like 50 years. And it started with the first Dow Chemical Research Grant at Oregon State Department of Forestry, where they wanted to figure out how to use surplus Agent Orange instead of getting rid of it. And federal government started using it on the Siusla National Forest as well as other forests. And then I was a resident of Five Rivers then. I was one of the members of Citizens Against Toxic Sprays who sued the Forest Service. We were able to talk to the county because they were spraying the similar kind of herbicides, and we were getting it from all sides. And there were some really horrendous things that happened, but a lot of information came out during that time. And if any of you county commissioners have not read A Bitter Fog by Carol Van Strom, I highly recommend it. It's not just the story of what happened in Five Rivers. It's the story of fraudulent pesticide registration through a whole lab called IBT. It was a big thing that was discovered in the 80s. It also talks about what it takes to get any one single pesticide off the market, which is a long involved thing. I won't get into that. But there's always a risk-benefit analysis, and what you see is the people experiencing the risks are not the same people who are getting the benefit. And that's a problem that has been well documented in this county for at least since the doctors spoke up in 1980 and wanted to get a stop to the increased birth defects and miscarriage rate in the county. I've seen that the State Forest Practices Act is pretty much written by the timber companies, and your pesticide state laws are pretty much lobbied by your chemical company. So it's local control is really becoming very, very important across this whole country. And also the concept that an ecosystem or an estuary has rights is also becoming a global problem. It's not just something that we're thinking about brand new here. You have a country of Ecuador who actually wrote it into the Constitution that a river has rights not to die, not to be killed. And every day we're reading in the news recently, I think it was in Africa, some Chinese mining company just destroyed an entire river system. And that was recently. So we're really getting more information about global problems, but as we think globally, we have to act locally. And so that's why I'm really grateful that the Citizens for Healthy County put this ballot measure on and that they backed it up with a nonprofit ready to fight it in every way they can. And I think that if we get to the basics of the Oregon Constitution, as Maria pointed out, it's mainly for protecting the safety of the constituents. Anyway, thank you very much, and we'll be following. I want to say, I was on the Lincoln County Planning Commission for many, many years and was elected chairman at one time. And it was really amazing because I was so vocal in the anti-herbicide movement. I called myself, an herbicide maniac. I worked on this for 10 years. I helped fund and start the Northwest Coalition for Alternatives to Pesticides. It's now the Northwest Center for Alternatives to Pesticides. Very active since 1977. It's their 40th anniversary. They have an office in Eugene. And they publish alternatives for everything. And their book that they put out is designed for people to copy and share. But when I was on the County Planning Commission and was chairman, I had attorneys for Boise Cascade and Weyerhaeuser showing up at every meeting arguing whether or not I had a right to an opinion as a chairman. And that was take on 45-minute talk one time just to try to stop me from having an opinion. I was just running a meeting. So I understand what pressure can be put upon individuals by corporate entities. And like I say, got to think globally, act locally, and protect our water. It's the most precious resource that we have. Anyway, thank you very much.
That's all we have on the list.
Okay. I'll give you one last chance. Is there anyone else who'd like to testify? Okay, come forward, sign your name. Two people.
A pretty quick statement.
Introduce yourself.
I'm sorry. My name is Vicki Dunaway. I'm from Depot Bay. I went to Virginia Tech, which back in those days, a long time ago, was known as a cow college and agriculture college. And my subject of interest was horticulture, and I also studied biology. And that's where the days before organic farming was at all. there was very little organic farming. It was just getting started. It was mostly being done by hippies that went back to the land. I was at Virginia Tech, which was very much controlled by and funded by people who made and sold pesticides and fertilizers, and most of the support for the agriculture department came from those people. And I was trying to tell folks there, well, maybe we should look at some of these other alternatives, because I was studying it on my own, just as an individual. I was doing some organic gardening in my backyard and had a lot of successes and a lot of failures. I was pretty much laughed at, just like most of the old hippies, or they were young hippies then, were being laughed at. And everybody said, well, this is just, you can do organic gardening in your backyard, but it will never work on a large scale. Well, all you have to do now is look at the organic farming industry. All of the work, the initial work, was done by people like this lady here, who had small-scale farming or gardening and learned the techniques, studied, really worked. And these are people who knew what they were doing. They were not ignorant people. And I resent having people called ignorant just because they oppose this bit or this spraying. There are other ways to do what needs to be done, and that's what we need to look forward to. And I hope that people will keep that in mind and think about the possibility of a better future. Thank you.
Thank you.
Casey. Yes, let's see what else we got here.
Ellen?
This is more of a...
Please introduce yourself.
Ellen Bristow, resident of Newport. and this is just I'm taking advantage because I forget things. I'm old. Do you have any idea, Wayne, how long this process is? And my only reason for a timeline is please don't let NHS do this on 8/21. Don't even do it in August. Is there any ability to control that 1 month in this very interesting, important discussion?
Let me answer that one quickly.
Yes, please.
We have been in discussions with the court on 8/21. There will not be court.
Excellent.
Other than
excellent.
What absolutely has to happen.
Well, that, if they start hedging that way, tell them it absolutely can't happen then.
Yeah, I think that it'll actually move through the local process fairly quickly.
So,
it's hard for me to say. I mean, it depends on you know, the courts I know are extremely busy right now. But I think it could move through fairly quickly locally. What usually the...
What
the,
is locally? Fairly
locally means the circuit court.
No, okay, so you're saying it could happen in June or July?
I don't know if it'll happen that quickly, no.
Okay, so then we skip August, so we're looking maybe September?
Yeah.
Okay.
I can't control the court's docket. I wish I could.
Can you control them on August 21?
Yes,
we can. Thank you.
No, they're aware of the issues, and they are going to control themselves.
Yeah. We can't control
them. No,
we can suggest this is not a good time.
Yes,
okay,
correct.
So, all right, thank you. I know that's a goof.
Ellen, I'm old too,
I
can relate to you.
Okay, thank you.
Alicia Kern.
Alicia Kern, Newport. We the people. That's what I want you to think about. That's who spoke for this election. We the people. The people decided what they want. So please, listen to the people. They're the ones that have voted you in. Remember that. As far as the direct action is concerned, if the sheriff would enforce the law itself, there would be no direct action. But when Ford says he's not going to enforce the law, yes, it could encourage direct action. So keep that in mind also. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. We've come to the end of constituent input. Next meeting is Wednesday, June 14th. Excuse me, Wednesday, the 14th. And we're going to meet at Wallsport.
Yeah, joint session.
And we have a joint session at 6 p.m. starting there, and then immediately after that, we have our regular commissioners meeting. We'll be in the Wallsport area at the Wallsport City Hall. But that meeting's adjourned.